what I want to do, and by the way, you gotta love the Taxpayers Association. Last night putting together my presentation. I always like to have the presentation have the most current data, so I literally start kind of putting it together at 10 o'clock the night before. So I'm sitting down to put this together. I turn on the news and Billy pops up and talking about the pay of public sector employees, the highest paid public sector employees, and kind of listing the public sector employees who get paid more than the governor. And how, do you have the number of how many of them get paid more than the governor? I mean, it was dozens. 29 out of 50 cities pay more to their public servants than the governor. So just, and thank you for being that watchdog. You know, I always think of the bulldog on this thing, and they were being the bulldog last night. So thanks for that. So what I want to do real quick is just kind of give you an overview of our economic conditions right now, both nationally and at the state level, kind of what we're looking at, how things are working out. We're going through a little bit of a change right now, and I'll point some of those out to you. We're starting to see some inflection points in some of our data, and I'm watching it really closely. One of the things I love about my job is every single day the story changes, because every single day we have a new data point. Every single day we get new information, and so I'm always, and that's why I always put my presentation together the night before, because it could change from day to day, and it will change. The story tomorrow will be different than the story that I give today. So first of all, let's look at the markets, the equity markets. This is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Looking back for the past few years, you can see how the Dow was trending between about 16 and 18,000 during most of 2015 and 2016. Then we had, so here's our first inflection point, kind of our shock, right here. That's Election Day of 2016. You can see how dramatically markets changed with the election of Donald Trump and the Trump administration. And it's not the markets like or don't like Donald Trump. They respond to expectations of future economic activity. And that expectation changed fundamentally with the election of Donald Trump. They said the focus is now going to be entirely on growing the economy, aside from everything else. And so during most of 2017, we saw all-time highs in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. 70 days alone in 2017, we saw all-time highs, going up as high as approaching 27,000 on January 26th of 2018. And as you know, when things go up, they just keep going up forever, right? You could just draw a trend line, and we're just going to grow straight through the roof, right? Not necessarily. So January 26, 2018 is right there. There's our second inflection point. The feeling and the sentiment of markets has fundamentally changed since January of this year. Look at that volatility. Look at that trend. The trend is downward now. And we define a market correction. There's kind of two big terms. There's bulls and bears, but then there's corrections and there's bear markets. A correction is defined as a market dropping 10% from its previous high. And markets like to test levels. So they test highs and they test lows. So you can see this red line is the correction territory on the Dow. So they tested it in the beginning of February. Then they recovered. Then they had a bigger test in March, recovered. And then the most recent test was just at the beginning of this month. Now, we've seen a nice run-up in the last few weeks, and we saw a big update yesterday, and I'll talk about that a little bit. But you can see, when we put those two together, there's 2017, and there's 2018 so far. So we're seeing a dramatic change in expectations of future economic activity by markets. So why? What's going on? So on the good side, we see business optimism is way up. This is the National Federation of Independent Businesses survey of business sentiment. And again, you can see that inflection point where right after the election, it popped up to about 105 and has stayed at that high level ever since. So businesses continue to feel really good about the overall economic conditions in America. Consumer confidence is also very high. Not quite as dramatic, but you see that it was right around 100 for most of 2015 and 16, and then popped up into 17 and has remained at a higher level, indicating that people feel really good about the economy right now. When we put together, this was a great one that I got from the Wall Street Journal. They took several of these optimism indexes and put them together. And look at the kind of the dark blue line. It's the average of all those. And you see that trend where we're kind of trending down, and then the shock, and we pop up, and we've stayed at that higher level ever since. So people's feelings about the economy are very strong. Now, you know, what is the Trump economic agenda? Ignore all the craziness, ignore the wall and Stormy Daniels and all that. What did Trump say that he would, why did the markets react so positively to the Trump agenda? So it's kind of a five-point plan, repeal and replace Affordable Care Act, health care reform, tax reform, infrastructure spending, regulatory reform, and renegotiating trade deals. And we've seen parts of all of this kind of come out in different ways. We've seen health care reform last summer, didn't go very well. Tax reform, pretty successful. Infrastructure, they're trying to push that right now, but Congress is not very excited about it. I don't know how successful that's going to be. Regulatory reform has been kind of the unsung victory of the administration. They have been very successful in reducing regulations and pulling back on the promulgation of new regulations. And then we've seen a lot about renegotiating trade deals just in the last few days. And that's one of the big components in our market reaction yesterday. So I'm not going to get into the tax reform specifically, because there will be a lot of discussion of that today. The bottom line, though, there's a few things that I want you to take out of this, though. On the individual side, a lot of impacts, but not a lot of big impacts. They're relatively small compared to the corporate side. But look at this. Everything sunsets in 2025. I shouldn't say everything. The repeal of the individual mandate is permanent. But everything else on the individual side goes away in 2025 unless Congress reauthorizes it. So this is all temporary unless Congress is willing to keep it going. Corporate side is relatively smaller in the number of impacts, but those impacts are huge. Going from 35 to 21% on the corporate income tax is huge. Pass-through income deduction of 20% is huge. Repatriation, going to a territorial tax system. That alone, right now there's about $2.3 trillion of U.S. corporate money sitting overseas because of our double taxation policy. Now that $2.3 trillion will come back into America and be reinvested. So there are huge economic impacts from this. When we start to look at it, GDP is probably the number one indicator of the overall economy that exists. And we've seen very strong GDP throughout most of 2017, coming in around 3%. We're down a little bit in the first quarter, but that's typical. It's interesting. We always know that there's going to be weather impacts in the first quarter, but the Department of Commerce always struggles to incorporate those weather impacts. And so GDP is down a little bit, but I think you're going to see it return to about 3 to 3.5% for the rest of this year. And that, by the way, is the Trump administration's goal, is between 3 and 4% in GDP growth going forward. When we look at the monthly jobs report, which is, if you want to be really nerdy, on the first Friday of every month at 6:30 our time, they release this data. And it's one of those, when you hear about market movers, it is the market mover. And the reason they release it at 6:30 is because markets open at 7:30 and they want to make sure that markets have time to digest it. So what does all this mean? Number one, 91 straight months of job growth in America. The longest string of consecutive job growth in our nation's history. We're now in the second longest expansion in our nation's history. The longest ever was in the 1990s. It's possible that we could pass up that longest expansion. So, but we've seen a long period of sustained growth in our economy at this point. Where is it happening? Look at this one. Natural resources and mining, growing 8.8%. You know, it really is. When you talk about boom and bust, I mean, that sector a year ago was contracting by 8.8%, and now it's expanding by 8.8%. So they're going through a boom again. And I'll show you why that is in just a second. But also construction, 3.7%. And look at this. And I want to show you with the actual numbers. So this is kind of the good sector of the economy. This is the service sector of the economy. We continue to see the majority of the growth in our economy happening in the service sector. We are becoming more of a service-based economy in the United States and locally. Unemployment rate. This was a big surprise in the jobs report. So pay attention to this red line. That red line is kind of a rough definition of what we call full employment. And above that red line, we were upwards of 10% coming out of the recession. By the way, the shaded areas are recessions. Coming out of the recession, we're at 10%. When you're above that red line, it means you have too many workers seeking too few jobs. When the red line and the blue line intersect, it means that we're kind of at the sweet spot. If you want a job, you can find it. If you need an employee, you can find it. Now, unemployment dropping is good until it goes below that red line. Then it starts to become a problem. And that's what we're seeing in Utah, is now we've got too many jobs looking for too few workers. And we see it continue to drop further and further down. This is the lowest level in nearly two decades, since December of 2000. And look what happens when your unemployment rate gets extremely low. Extremely low, recession. Extremely low, recession. So we don't know if or when. Well, we do know if. People always say, is there going to be a recession? Yes, there's going to be a recession. The only question is, when will it happen? And we don't know what will trigger that next recession, but we're starting to see those conditions emerge. As that unemployment rate continues to go lower and lower, it becomes more and more difficult for businesses to expand. It becomes more and more difficult for regular economic conditions to exist. And even with that, now, here's one of the struggles. Even with that very low unemployment rate, our labor force participation rate remains extremely low, at the levels we saw in the late 1970s. Now, for 20 years, we had labor force participation about 63 to 64%, meaning that 64% of the population was actively engaged in the labor force. During our expansion, this is our expansion, we saw it dropping. And now, even with these really extreme conditions of very low unemployment, we're not pulling people off the sidelines. More and more people are leaving the labor force. And that's creating a situation that is even more concerning than normal conditions. Yeah? Right here. Baby boomers. We call this the silver wave. And I see a few of the people surfing that silver wave in here. 10,000 baby boomers every single day reach retirement age. And they're leaving the labor force in greater and greater numbers. Look, this is as that group, as their share of the total labor force increases, we see them dragging down that participation rate. And the reason is, and you say, well, of course, because they have to retire. They don't have to retire. You can work late into your life, but not if we have these rigid constraints of, you know, 5 days a week, 40 hours, 8 hours a day, you have to go in and punch at the time clock. We've got to get more flexible in how we define work. And we've got to encourage different scenarios in work, contracting work, part-time work, working remotely to try to keep these people engaged longer and further into their lives. On the other side, we've got, you know, you say, well, that's okay. We don't need the baby boomers. They're, you know, old and lazy. We've got the millennials. But the millennials aren't working either. So there is the teenage labor force participation rate. In the 1970s, we had 57% of the teenagers working. Now we're at 35%. So we've got the boomers leaving the labor force on one side, and we've got the millennials kind of holding off, not wanting to enter the labor force on the front side. Now, the problem with this is, look at this. This is our number of employees for each job opening. Coming out of the recession, we're approaching 7 applicants for each job opening. Now we're at 1. So it's getting tighter and tighter and tighter. So with all this condition, when you've got very high employment growth, very low unemployment, a tightening labor market, what should we see? Higher wages, right? That's the problem. We're not seeing the jump in wages yet. Now, before the recession, we were at about 3.5% growth in wages. Dropped down to about 1.5% after the recession. Now, we should be back at 3.5% right now. And we should have been at 3% for the past several months. We're only at about 2.5%. We're just barely above that long-term average of 2.4. Now, that's good if we can hold down those costs and keep those labor costs lower, but it's going to happen. So this is looking at tracking wage growth and job growth. And you can see that historically, job growth and wage growth go in tandem. They always go together. And then look, right here. Right about a year ago, about 12 months ago, those two started to diverge. Now, they're not going to diverge forever. What's going to happen is eventually they're going to come back together. They're going to kind of regress back to the same path, which means we're going to see a pop in wages. And we don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. And when that happens, it turns into inflation. So the Fed has what we call a dual mandate. Number one, this is a mandate by Congress. Number one, they need to be aiming towards full employment. Number two is low and stable inflation. Their target is 2%, which is this red line. Now, inflation, just like wage growth, inflation has been too low for too long. So, and you can see that during this expansion period, the Fed was unable to raise rates the way they wanted to because inflation was so low. Now, the fear is as those labor market conditions continue to tighten, we're going to see that pop in wages, and that pop in wages is going to turn into a pop in inflation. And we can see inflation go from 2% to a level like 4% conceivably overnight. And if inflation goes past that 2% level that the Fed is aiming at, they will have to get more aggressive in raising interest rates, which will have the effect of slowing down the economy. And potentially, this is kind of the scenario that markets are worried about. As they raise those rates very quickly, it could actually push us into a recession. So the Fed has raised rates 6 times since they went through the dramatic drop. We were at about zero for several years. This was the Fed's reaction to the Great Recession, going from around 5.5% to essentially 0% on the federal funds rate, which is the shortest term interest rate. Now, they've raised it up since then, so we're at the range between about 1.5 and 1.75. Now, where is the Fed going to go from here? Here's their official forecast. Look at the green bars. So the Fed says we're going to raise rates 2 more times in 2018, and then 3 times in 2019, 2 to 3 times in 2020, and then with a long-run average of about 2.9%, which is about twice what the rates are right now. So that's what the Fed says they're going to do. What do markets think is going to happen? So here's the Fed's official forecast in black, and then the others are what markets are predicting the Fed will do. Look at this. In 2018, markets say, no, you're not going to raise it 2 times. You're going to raise rates 3 more times. And the reason the Fed is going to have to raise rates 3 times is because the economy is going to start to overheat. We're going to see that pop in wages. We're going to see that pop in inflation. And the Fed will have to get more aggressive to respond to that overheating economy. In 2019, markets say, yeah, you're right. You're going to raise them 3 more times. But then look at this one. This is the Fed's forecast. This is what markets think the Fed is going to do. Markets are essentially saying by the end of 2020, we're going to see a downturn severe enough that the Fed is going to have to start dropping rates. So kind of that turning point of the overall economy happens somewhere in the next 12 to 18 months. That's kind of the expectation among markets. Now, you know, it's, again, you have to keep in mind, we're in the longest expansion, the longest consecutive job growth in our nation's history. We're in the second longest expansion in our nation's history. We're due. So we're due for a recession. We're starting to see the signs of it. We're starting to see the indications that it's going to happen, and we just need to be ready for it. Now, that's not to say that it's going to happen right away, but we need to be ready for it when it happens. Oil prices rising. We've actually, this morning, we're at about $72 a barrel. So we're seeing a big increase just over the last few weeks in oil prices. This is causing gas prices to go up. The national average, this is from yesterday, is $2.91 a gallon. In Utah, we're even higher. We're at about $3.14 a gallon. So we're seeing that big increase. In fact, they said the price of gasoline, the price of gas at the pump has gone up 50 cents in the last year. That's money that is coming out of your pocketbook and going towards gasoline. And if you couple that with higher interest rates, which are making lending costs more expensive, housing costs more expensive, you can see how that can really constrain people's budgets. And then on the other side, so yesterday the Dow jumped, at one point it was up over 360 points, ended up about up 300 points. The reason for that was the Trump administration said that they're going to start pulling back on their economic protectionism and that they're going to start trying to come up with trade deals and stop waging a trade war on China. While it sounds good to be protecting American steel producers and American jobs, it has a cost. And you can see that cost here. So this is saying if we have a 10% increase on steel prices, so a tariff on foreign steel, what happens? Metal products go up. Electrical equipment goes up. Machinery becomes more expensive. Motor vehicles become more expensive. So while it helps steel producers, it hurts everyone else, and it makes everything else more expensive. Among economists, what is their biggest fear right now? And right here it said, trade war hits global growth. So there is a big fear that if we turn into a trade war and if we start to let economic protectionism rule, that could turn into, that could really start to hurt overall global growth. So that's why you saw a very positive response to the Trump administration saying that they're going to pull back on that a little bit. Okay, so how are things looking in Utah? Things are really strong in our state right now. Utah continues to be one of the shining stars in our nation's economy. Third fastest growing state in the United States. And also, we're right in the center of the fastest growing region of the United States. You can really see that. So this is drilling down to the county level. So you can kind of see hot spots in our nation. And, you know, there's some hot spots in Florida, some hot spots on the kind of the East Coast, hot spots in Texas, Dallas. What is this right there? Is that Houston? No, there's Houston. There's Dallas, San Antonio. But look at this. I mean, just all over the West, you can just see where population is just popping all over us, all around us. We're seeing dramatic increases in population as people kind of move out of the East Coast and the Midwest and into the Intermountain West. When we look at, pay attention to the dark blue, that's our net migration. And this is a measure of the relative strength of our economy compared to other states' economies. If we've got net in-migration, it means we're stronger relative to them. If we got out-migration, then it means we're relatively weaker. So not only do we see good in-migration, but we see accelerating migration. As more and more people come into the state, they learn more about the good message in Utah. We get stronger and stronger migration. Where are they going? You can really see this. We call this a donut effect, where you've got relatively slower growth in Salt Lake County at about 1.3%, which, by the way, is still pretty good compared to the national average, but then very high growth on the periphery of our urban core. Look at this. Utah County, 2.7%. Wasatch County, 5%. Davis County, 1.8%. Weber County about 1.8, Morgan 4.4, so really big. And look at that, Tooele County 4.4. Grantsville is just exploding right now in growth. And then also big growth, of course, in Washington County and Iron County in the southern part of the state. So we're seeing most of the growth happening along this kind of I-15 corridor in our state. When we look at employment growth, there's a really interesting trend that I've been seeing for the past couple years, and that's Utah and Idaho are in this constant battle for number one. And we're battling for population growth. We're battling for employment growth. Idaho won the war for population growth last year. But with employment growth, we've been going back and forth. And this month, we're actually tied with Idaho. So Nevada came out on number one with 3.4% growth. Utah and Idaho at 3.3%, but still very strong growth. Look at Wyoming, though. Wyoming, a year ago, Wyoming was the worst performing economy in the nation. And in 1 year, they've popped from the worst to now they're 26th best. So they're moving up very quickly as their energy sector starts to recover. So, you know, we talk about the horrible and the huge impacts of the Great Recession. We lost 92,000 jobs in Utah during the Great Recession. Since the end of the recession, we've gained 334,000 jobs. So we have seen a strong recovery to the recession, and our state is doing very well. Where are we seeing the growth? Now, Utah's energy industry isn't as productive, isn't as profitable as some of the other parts of the country. You know, you've got Texas and Oklahoma and North Dakota and some of those areas, and they've seen the boom. We're not quite seeing it to that extent in Utah that we're seeing in some of the other areas. So we're not seeing that flip yet, but I think we're going to see it soon. I think we're going to see that natural resources flip in the next couple months. But look at this, construction, 7.5% growth. Leisure and hospitality, 4.8%. And then you can also see kind of that big change. We're moving from a goods-based economy to a service-based economy. Every single day, we see that the majority of the jobs in Utah are being created in the service sector. When you look historically, so this is an analysis done by the University of Utah. In 1955, 43% of the jobs were in the service sector. 1985, 58%. By 2016, 68%. I'm sorry, I said jobs. This is consumer spending. 68% of personal consumption is in the service sector rather than in goods. So you can see that dramatically. What is that doing to our tax system? This is the reason that we're seeing, by the way, if you can't read that, the red is the income tax base, gray is the sales tax base. So we see an increasing income tax base and a decreasing sales tax base. This is education funding. This is everything else. So that's one of the struggles that we're running into, is we're seeing this divergence in our sources of revenue into the state. Where are we seeing the employment growth? Once again, Utah County, look at this, 5.9%, nearly twice the state average, and dramatically higher than the national average. Wasatch County, 6.5. Washington County, 5% job growth. What's really remarkable is how widespread geographically we're seeing the benefits. So this data just came out, I think it was yesterday. The only county that saw a drop in employment was Daggett. I drilled down. This was the loss of like 20 jobs. You know, I mean, a family moved out and Daggett went negative. But everyone else is positive. Grand County, Wayne County, Paiute County growing 8.6%. So we are seeing very strong and widespread geographic distribution of our job gains. Our state has the 11th lowest unemployment rate in the country. That's good. We don't want to win this one. We don't want to have the lowest unemployment in the country. Even there, we're at 3.1%, which is lower than I'd like to be. And when we look at the county level, you can start to see, again, we've got some struggles going on with our low unemployment. Utah County, 2.8%. Cache County, 2.7%. That's just too low. We've got to find a way to pull more people off the sidelines and into the labor force. And then we do have a little bit higher unemployment in our more rural areas. I was down in Grand County a few months ago, and they taught me a new term. They said locals call it fun employment. And essentially what it is these people that work on the in the recreational areas, they work during the season, and then they just go on unemployment in the off season. And they say, well, you know, that's the price you pay for, you know, working at a ski resort or working at, in Moab or something. So there is a different nature of unemployment in especially some of these tourist areas than along the Wasatch Front. But it is something that we do need to be addressing. You can see, I mean, you can literally see the urban-rural divide in our state in terms of unemployment rates throughout our state. Personally, so again, when I say we have very high employment growth, very low unemployment, the result should be a jump in wages. We're seeing that in Utah. We now have the third highest personal income growth in the country. U.S. growing at 3.1%, Utah's growing at 4.4%. So we're seeing that jump in income. We're seeing that pressure on wages happening because of our tight labor market. But even with that, Utah has one of the lowest poverty rates in the country. So the economic benefits that we're seeing are really being felt widespread among all different age groups and among all different income groups. When we look at consumer confidence, this is the Wasatch Front Consumer Confidence Index. This is something that Zions Bank produces. You see that not only is the national rate high, but Utah actually just crossed the U.S. for consumer confidence. So people feel very good about the Utah economy. Now, here's that of inflation. Remember I said when wages pop, inflation pops. The U.S. inflation is around 2.5%. Utah is at 4%. So we're seeing those big increases. We saw, I just mentioned it with gas prices. We're seeing it with real estate as well. Home prices in Utah have passed their pre-recession levels. We're now above 262,000. I'll tell you, I said that number a few weeks ago, and a builder came to me and he said, I challenge you to find a house in Utah for 262,000. I mean, it's tough. It is tough to, and that market is getting tougher and tougher, and especially around that level, around that 200,000 to 300,000 level, homes are flying just lightning fast. When you get above, we're starting to see a little bit of weakness on the high end, kind of the 600 and above, we're starting to see a little bit of weakness. But that core area right around the median is very strong right now. Construction activity is strong. Remember, I said construction employment is the highest in the state. Here's the problem, though. Before the recession, we were growing by about 15,000 building permits per year. Right before the recession in 2005, we had 20,000 housing permits. After the recession, dropped down to 5,000. So this is too many. This is not enough. This is probably about the right level, about 15,000. Where are we right now? We're only about 13,000. So we're not building enough to keep up with that demand, with all those people moving in and that growth. So this is looking at the growth of housing units, so homes, compared to households or population. So you should have more housing units than households to kind of keep up with population growth. And that's what traditionally we've seen during the 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, but that's flipped now. Now we've got more households being created, so more people coming into our state, and we're not building enough houses to hold those people. And so we've flipped this, and that's why we're starting to hear all these disparities. That's why we're seeing the big increase, and you can see it right here. Where is it? You can see that the big increase yellow in multifamily, because we just can't build enough single-family homes to keep up with that demand. And so we're having to build more multifamily for those people. When we look at the value of new residential construction, you can really see where that is spiking, and we've far surpassed our pre-recession levels on the value of new residential construction, which means that because we're not building enough, now we're overbuilding in terms of the price and the amenities that we're building into these new units. But eventually this has got to end. You can't have housing construction or home prices growing faster than the rate of inflation or growing faster than wages. Eventually, and this is where you can kind of see into the mind of an economist. See how it's just going up, up, and then the forecast is down? You know, we keep blasting through this forecast every time, but we keep saying it's got to end, and it's got to end sometime, and we don't know when, but we keep forecasting that it will end, and eventually, and what's going to trigger that? That's the question. Will it be the higher interest rates? Will it be the overheating of the economy? Will it be a trade war? We don't know, but there's got to be a trigger that starts to bring that down. Just kind of wrapping it up, putting it all together, this is... For you know, you guys are a pretty technical crowd. This is one of my favorite nerd slides, because this is like 4 years of data and 6 data points, and this is probably one of the most important single slides for understanding state revenues, because this is what feeds the Utah state revenue. So we've got population growth, and by the way, we're going back to 2016 and forecast to 20 through 2019. Population, we see stable growth, continuing about the same level that we've seen for the past few years. Employment dropping down a little bit. And the reason why we dropped down a little bit is because that very high unemployment rate constrains our ability to grow as fast as we'd like to grow under ideal conditions. Personal income growth, again, we think we saw a high point in 2017. And now here's the funny thing, drops all the way down to 5% per year growth. I mean, that's enormous growth in personal income. Home prices, again, we think we saw a high point in 2017 dropping down, but see, look at the difference between these two. Home prices, we're forecasting growth of 6.5%, which is still higher than that personal income growth. That's a problem. And then retail sales, also we think we saw a high point in 2017 and growing at about 5% for the next couple years. Now, why does this matter? Personal income turns into the income tax. Retail sales turns into the sales tax and the general fund, and home prices turns into the property tax. So that's what feeds our major sources of revenue. So overall, things are still looking good. I think for 2018, we will continue to see a strong economy. My biggest fear for 2018 is that the economy may start to overheat. Just keep in mind that the message I want to leave with you: we are in the longest consecutive time of job growth in our nation's history and the second longest expansion in our nation's history. We're at the end of the economic expansion. I don't know when it's going to change, but it's going to be within the next 2 years probably. And so we need to be ready for that. We need to be prepared for that. I don't think we were properly prepared when the Great Recession hit in 2008. And I think it's our responsibility to kind of understand that now and prepare for it and be ready when that rainy day comes. So thanks so much for having me.
Any questions? I guess not. Thank you so much.